Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.
We recently had a conversation about gut health and the reaction we got on the text to 51552 and emails to jen@rte.ie was so huge that we said we'd have to get consultant gastroenterologist and gut expert Professor Barbara Ryan on to speak with us more. Professor Ryan is on the line. Hello, how
Hi,
are you?
How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, listen, thank you so much for doing this. I was very excited to have you on. I'm all about the gut health and it's something
that I love
talking about. Can I ask you, though, how important is gut health?
Okay, so, I mean, gut health, we realise nowadays, is pretty much central to everything. What's going on in our gut really has an effect on every part of our body. And, you know, when we talk about gut health, we now know that having good gut health affects your risks of diabetes. It's related to, you know, obesity, apart from, you know, what's going on in your gut itself. So, I mean, it couldn't be more important. And it's really great as a gastroenterologist, you know, that suddenly everybody realizes how important the gut is.
It's kind of like not a buzzword lately, but it's become very popular to talk about in recent years.
Yeah, and I suppose that, you know, when people talk about gut health nowadays, they probably mean the health, you know, having a healthy mix of bacteria in your gut. And everybody, I mean, you know, if you talk to somebody 10 years ago about the gut microbiome or microbiota, they'd be going, you know, you what? And now, I mean, pretty much everybody knows about the gut microbiome and all those trillions of bacteria that live in our gut. And so when we talk about gut health, that's kind of what we mean, having a healthy mix of bacteria in the gut.
Okay.
But as a gastroenterologist, I think gut health is more than that, because you can, you know, it also means that you don't suffer with any uncomfortable gut symptoms. You don't have any, you know, problematic gut conditions like IBS, which is incredibly common amongst women in particular. So it's bigger, I guess, than just having a healthy mix of bacteria in your gut, although that is incredibly important.
Where do my gut microbiomes come from?
That's a really good question. So, you know, it depends on, to some extent, how you were born. So children that are born by normal vaginal delivery, they get exposed to a different set of bacteria as they're literally being born than, say, children who are born by cesarean section. So early on, when a baby's born and is exposed to the world for the first time, their gut bacteria are very much comprised of all the things they're exposed to in their environment. And then, you know, children who are breastfed will have different gut microbiota to children who are fed formula, for example. When children start to be weaned and put onto solid food, we get another change. But by the time the toddler is maybe 2 or 3 and eating solid foods, you know, they have a more adult-like mix of bacteria. So basically it comes from the environment, the food we eat, what we're exposed to. And, you know, I suppose one of the problems in modern-day world is that everything is so hygienic, maybe.
Yeah.
And children are brought up in a much more hygienic environment than before. They're not being exposed to all the different bacteria and parasites and worms and things that people used to be exposed to 50 and 100 years ago. So it's all of those things. It's the environment you're in, the food you eat, and to some extent early on in life, it's the method of the way you were born.
Okay.
Although that probably has lesser of effect, you know, as you get older.
Just get the kids out eating dirt, they'd be grand. Listen.
Be. Crawling around in the dirt, yeah, absolutely. Putting everything in their mouth. That's what our kids should be doing.
Speaking of which, probiotics and supplements are big business these days, but are they useful?
So I think that if you're interested in looking after your gut health and, you know, trying to have a really healthy mix of gut bacteria, there are lots of other things you can do without having to spend money on supplements and probiotics. You know, the most important thing you can do is eat a healthy, balanced diet, eat plenty of fiber. Like, fiber is an incredible superfood, and it feeds and it nourishes your gut bacteria. So actually, the diet and your lifestyle have a much, much bigger effect on your gut bacteria than, say, probiotics. Like, if you think your average probiotic strain contains one, maybe 3 or 4, some of them maybe more, but a few different strains of bacteria, maybe, say, 3 or 4 on average. The gut bacteria, like, you've got 100 trillion bacteria in there, and most people will have maybe 300 or 500 different types of bacteria that kind of make up the bulk of that. So, you know, taking a probiotic that contains 1 or 2 different strains, or even 3 or 4, isn't going to absolutely change all of that. It's all the other things you're doing to nourish the mix of bacteria that's in there. So personally, I think the role of probiotics is oversold, and I think their effects are not as magical as people are led to believe.
Okay.
And there are lots of other things you can do for free, you know, that to nurture your gut health.
Let's talk about that. So how can we improve our gut health in general?
Okay. So now I'm going to sound really boring. You were listening. You were talking earlier about the things your mum used to say to you, you know, when the lies that we were told. But their mum also told us some truths. You know, eat your vegetables. That our mums couldn't have been more right when they told us that. So, you know, in terms of diet, the things you can do to help your gut health and promote the good gut bacteria, firstly, eat plenty of fiber. And an average adult probably needs about 25 to 35 grams of fiber per day. And like, that's actually quite a lot. And there are apps and things now that you can look to track your fiber, et cetera. But like, that's a bowl of porridge. It's a couple of pieces of wholemeal bread. It is several pieces of fruit and maybe three helpings of vegetables or salad in the day. So actually, that's quite a lot. And a study recently showed that, you know, about 60% of people in the UK, and we're probably similar, we're eating less, 18 grams of fiber or less per day. So almost under half of what they should be eating. So fiber is really the most important thing. Eating not too much processed foods. Processed foods contain lots of things and like saturated fats and these things called trans fats that are actually very bad for our gut health. And it's been shown that diet high in processed foods actually is very bad for your gut bacteria.
And what about children? What about how do we mind the gut health in our kids?
I mean, really, it's kind of the same thing as for adults. You know, we need to be getting them to eat fiber. We need to, and, you know, it can be a challenge and kids can actually be fatty. But, you know, there are things you can do, like, you know, colourful foods, getting them to eat the rainbow, make a little lunchbox when they're going to school with lots of different colours and peppers and oranges and carrots, things that look fun. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. Trying to get the kids to not eat, you know, too much rubbish, saturated, you know, processed foods. Artificial sweeteners aren't great either for our gut health. That's been shown to reduce the health of our gut bacteria. So I guess it's trying to introduce kids early to a variety of fruits and vegetables in particular and wholemeal. Like if you can take brown foods rather than white. If your child likes crackers, can you use wholemeal crackers rather than, you know, white crackers? Similarly, if we could, you know, use brown bread or mixed grain bread rather than white bread.
Gotcha.
Dairy products are really good. Like they're fermented. We hear a lot now about fermented foods that contain bacteria. Obviously, yogurts, some cheeses, those sort of things also contain live bacteria. And if you can, you know, get your child to eat a little bit of those as well. But it's pretty much the same rules. I guess the challenge is, with all the, you know, the temptation out there for kids and all the sweets and the treats, it's trying to get them to eat the fruits and the vegetables and the wholemeal. It's the same as what we all should be doing.
What about kids taking antibiotics? I mean, I know sometimes it's inevitable, but there's a lot of stuff knocking around. But would taking antibiotics, would that affect your gut?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So the antibiotics absolutely affect your gut bacteria while you're on them. But some really interesting studies have been done to show can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
It's shown that actually antibiotics will, while you're taking them, they reduce, apologies for that, reduce the number, the variety of bacteria in your gut, but may not actually reduce the number. But if you then follow it out after a course of antibiotics, in children, most children, their gut bacteria have recovered completely within 4 weeks of taking an antibiotic. And in adults, it seems to take a little bit longer, but by and large, for most of us, our bacteria are back to where they were about by 6 to 8 weeks after taking an antibiotic.
Okay.
So most people, our gut bacteria recovers automatically without taking anything. Now, there is some evidence that maybe certain probiotics might reduce, you know, they sometimes antibiotics cause diarrhea, particularly maybe in children. Certain probiotics may reduce antibiotic-associated diarrhea in children. There's a particular lactobacillus and another one, streptomyces. So, yeah, for most of us, probably it recovers by itself.
Okay. Can we talk about IBS for a second? Because I'm pretty sure I suffer from it sometimes, but I actually don't know if I do. But what is IBS exactly?
So IBS, first of all, is really common. So Jennifer, one in six women have it, so there's a high chance that you have it. So it's a what we call a functional condition. So it's a condition that affects how your gut is functioning without there being any kind of structural abnormality. So that's, and it causes symptoms like abdominal pain, which is generally kind of associated with passing bowel motion. So either pain cramps before or after you go to the bathroom. Having a bowel pattern that switches from maybe constipation to diarrhea, we call that an alternating type bowel pattern. Or some people can be mainly diarrhea or mainly constipation. So having an altered bowel pattern with pain, and then a change in the appearance of the bowel motion. So have you ever heard of this thing called the Bristol stool chart? It's a really graphic chart of what bowel motions look like. But type 1 are kind of like goat-like droppings.
Do you have that in the office, Barbara?
Pardon?
Do you have that poster in the office?
I have a cup with that on it from the 80s.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I don't mind using it. So some people then will alternate, the bowel motions will alter in appearance. But the main cardinal symptom of IBS is that you're getting pain in your tummy, changing or switching bowel pattern, change the appearance of your bowel motions. And then other symptoms are really common, like bloating. Like so many women in particular say, oh God, you know, by the end of the day, I look like I'm 6 months pregnant. I'm so uncomfortable. I just drink a glass of water and my tummy bloats. So bloating would be a really common problem as well. And the really frustrating thing about IBS for people is that, you know, you go to the doctor and you say these symptoms, and most of us would kind of make a diagnosis of IBS. You'll know from talking to somebody, yes, those symptoms sound very like IBS. And then we would probably do a few tests to rule out other things that can kind of mimic that, like maybe celiac disease, which can also cause bloating and a change in bowel pattern and affects about 1 in 100 Irish people. But when you have IBS with all these uncomfortable symptoms, actually all the tests are normal. So people can get very frustrated by that because, yes, we've done your blood, it's normal, we've checked your stools, they're not normal. They might even be sent for scopes because their symptoms are so bad. And they're normal too. But it's what's called a functional problem. And it's now been called a disorder of gut-brain interaction. So we know it's caused by a problem between how the brain and the gut are communicating. You've heard probably as well of this gut-brain axis and the intimate connection between the brain and the gut. So IBS is a condition that's caused by a malfunction of the connection between the brain and the nerves and the gut. Yeah. It's really common. 1 in 6 women.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Sometimes more common in women than men.
That is crazy. I got a lot of emails and questions in for you. Do you mind if I read some out to you?
I'd be delighted, yeah. Hope
it
I
says,
can help.
Hi, Jen. Can you ask Barbara what her thoughts are on eating for your blood type diet?
I can tell you categorically that I know nothing about that.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay. So maybe don't do it or do some more research. Another one. Hi, Jen. A question for Dr. Ryan, please. My mother's in her 70s and suffers from diverticulosis. And after a recent colonoscopy, was told she also has IBS. I'm just wondering if there are any particular foods or drinks like coffee that she should avoid. She does get flare-ups and suffers from a lot of pain from time to time. Just wondering what Dr. Ryan recommends.
So first of all, diverticulosis is where you get all these little pouches, like little air pockets. If anybody wants to have a look at our Instagram, we've got some funny little pictures of what diverticulosis looks like. So it's really common, and about 50% of people over the age of 50 will have it. So it's less common in young people. And often it kind of coexists with IBS as well. The question about it really, the food you need to eat depend on your symptoms. So for example, some people with diverticulosis may suffer with constipation. In which case, increasing the fiber intake, same with IBS, increasing fiber intake might be important. But other people who have IBS or diverticulosis may suffer more with kind of very bad cramps or diarrhea or episodes. You know, they get an urge to go and they have to dash to the bathroom, before they might have an accident, for example, which can be really awful if you're, you know, in Dundrum or Liffey Valley or something like that. And, you know, you aren't near the bathroom. So that can cause a lot of anxiety as well. But the food you eat really then depends on your main symptoms. So, for example, coffee is a bowel stimulant. So if you're suffering with constipation, actually a strong cup of coffee might be very helpful. If you suffer with diarrhea problems or this, you know, these sudden urges to go to the bathroom, then coffee can be problematic because it will make that worse. So it would really depend on what the main symptoms are. But if you're mainly constipated, coffee wouldn't be problematic. It doesn't irritate the bowel, but it does kind of trigger contractions in the bowel.
Okay. Okay. Another one. Hi, Jen. My boyfriend, a 36-year-old, like most men, has the absolute fear of visiting the doctor. He has a great diet, exercises regularly, good weight, and only drinks on occasion. When he does have a couple of drinks and a takeaway, he's left in bits for days with his stomach. Terrible cramps, not much movement in the bathroom. His answer is to limit the occasions he has out rather than go get it looked at. Could this be IBS? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, it could be IBS. And while I said IBS is more common in women than men, it still affects about 1 in 15 men.
Mm.
So it's not uncommon. Alcohol is a bowel, you know, it is a bowel stimulant and it is an irritant. It would really depend on where the pain is. You know, we kind of talk about the gut as kind of being the upper digestive system, which is everything from your mouth kind of down to your upper stomach, which is just below your breastbone, and then the lower digestive system. So, you know, it depends really on where he's getting the pain. If he was getting a lot of pain and it was mainly in the upper bit, well, then he might have problems. It could be reflux related. He might have an ulcer or gastritis, and alcohol can really irritate that. So if the pain is kind of that upper central part of the tummy, it might be that. But it can certainly trigger cramps and spasms in people who have irritable bowels. But it mightn't be the alcohol. If he's having a takeaway with that, she was saying it was tended to be the combination of the two. There are a lot of hidden ingredients in takeaway food. You know, while it can be incredibly tasty, there can be food, you know, additives. There can be a lot of things like onions and garlic, which can be a real trigger for many, many people with IBS. So, you know, it might be interesting to do the takeaway by itself, the same takeaway, or have the few drinks by themselves and see which one. And, you know, I think if he's having this as a very persistent thing, it certainly would make sense to have a chat with the GP. It could be, to explore a little further where the pain is. I think that would be the first port to call.
Barbara, we got so many in. I'm just going to do one more, otherwise we'll be here till 12 o'clock. Morning, I've been plagued with mouth ulcers since last July, this texter says, and after multiple blood tests, there's been no answer. My doctor has just referred me to a gastroenterologist and she has said the mouth is linked to the gut and I've already cut back on citrus and tomatoes and caffeine. Can you provide some insight into this or help in the short term until I get my appointment? Thanks a million, they say.
I mean, I think so. If she's seen her GP, you're absolutely right. The mouth ulcers are associated with a number of different bowel conditions, celiac probably being the most common one. So I presume if she's seen her GP, she's probably had a blood test to check for celiac. So that will be something important to check. And I think, you know, if there are some people get occasional mouth ulcers, but if you're getting really recurrent mouth ulcers, it is important to check that you don't have something like Crohn's or colitis or something like that. There isn't an easy solution for them. I mean, sometimes some people would say maybe cutting back on acidic foods, on very spicy foods, on very hot foods in the short term while she's waiting on her appointment. But if it is associated with an underlying gut condition like the ones I've mentioned, then really, it's going to need to have a diagnosis and treatment of those really before the mouth ulcers will heal up. But there are also some people who just get recurrent mouth ulcers, and we do lots of tests thinking, well, could they have Crohn's or could they have celiac? And we find out that they don't.
Okay.
So it isn't an absolute definite that she has an underlying condition.
Okay. Go to that appointment and see how you get on. Barbara, thanks so much for coming on and speaking with us this morning.
Welcome.
Where can people find out more about Good Health?
Myself and my colleague Elaine, we are at The Gut Experts on Instagram and Facebook and thegutexperts.com. We have a website with lots of helpful free information about all things gut related.
Brilliant. You're a star. Thank you so much for coming on the show. There we go. That was Professor Barbara Ryan, consultant, gastroenterologist, and one half of The Gut Experts. If you want to follow them on Instagram, a lot of free advice there, as she said. And just speaking to us there and answering your questions on gut health. So many questions in on this. We might need to return to it again. But thanks, Barbara, for coming on the show.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.